Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
Folks, welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. It's Brian once again with Rob and Ashley. We got a Talladega hangover we're still working through, apparently.
Talladega.
But how we doing this week, folks?
On Rob's behalf, he's the one.
I'm the one who got fucked up. It was me. I wasn't even there.
I'm very tired, though.
Yeah. I'm back to normal now. I'm feeling pretty good. How was your weekend, Brian? Did you feel good? You didn't go to the track. I know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I figured this was coming up at some point. My weekend was fine. It was just too fucking cold, man. It was like, It never got above 50 all weekend, and it was windy all weekend. And like, no offense, I'm not driving an hour and a half each way to sit in that type of weather. Like, for just a race, it doesn't mean anything. Like, I wanted to go, obviously. But plus, I noticed, like, I saw on Twitter, like, they moved the program up from... like starting at 7 to starting at 4 on Twitter at 10 o'clock. They were still racing. So fuck that. There's not a chance I'd be out there for 6 fucking hours.
This was not Fonda. It was that's out here.
Attica. Not Attica. Fucking Fremont was the one. Attica was supposed to run Friday, but it rained. So they didn't run at all.
It's cold everywhere.
In saying that, this coming weekend, if the weather is decent, I may go out because they are doing a dress as your favorite superhero night at Fremont. Oh, so that will be very interesting crowd watching.
What are you dressing as, Brian?
Yeah, tell us.
The only thing that I have that could even kind of constitute as a superhero costume is my Stone Cold vest, which they only break that out for one specific wrestling show a year, and it's certainly not going to be a 50 something degree dirt track race. So I'm not going to be dressing up, unfortunately. Sorry.
Ooh. Party pooper.
Well, true love, you were actually on the ground at Talladega. Did you dress up at all this weekend? I know we wouldn't be caught dead in a pair of cargo shorts and Crocs like me, but
so I mean, yeah, it was muddy and shitty. Did you bring your boots? Did you bring your Crocs? What was your footwear situation? Yeah.
I was in my same boots all weekend. So.
God, you are a fucking creature. I can't imagine that shit.
I did do a wardrobe change on Saturday in the truck before we went to the dirt track, because I didn't want to get my nice Xfinity Series clothes dirty.
Well, there's an old adage for the dirt track. It's don't wear nothing you like. So that's good advice.
I changed into all black.
That's awesome. So when did you get to Talladega? You weren't there for the ARCA race, right? Or you got there like right at the end of it, right?
Yeah, we were like pulling into the parking lot on Saturday morning because they ran that race very early.
Noon,
11
or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you didn't miss much.
The cleanest ARCA race in the history of the series, I would say. There was not a caution, right?
I think there was one caution just for the pit stops, but no wrecks, no nothing. It was just pretty much single file racing the whole time.
Yeah. Jake Finch getting the win there. Always like to see that. So
I texted y'all to see how much was left, and y'all were like, oh, there's 8 laps left, and there hasn't been any caution. So I was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, real bum to see Andy Jankowiak kind of get pushed out of line. I think he had an issue or something. Maybe he's lost fuel pressure or something like that. But yeah, Jake Finch getting the win there. A little family tradition shit going on with him. So that was cool.
How
his first ARCA win.
Do?
I think he got 11th or something like that.
Right around there, yeah. I mean, I think Tony Bredinger and Amber Bals, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Like, they both got Balquin. Top tens. Balquin, yeah.
Did you see Tony walking around the track handing out chicken fingers, true love?
No, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah, she was out there. And also, there was a Zen tent. Did you go there and get your dollar tens?
did not see the Zen tent.
Damn.
You can get Uncle Rob and Brian their dollar tins.
Fuck. Apparently they only had 3 milligrams, but for a dollar, I will load up and double up as much as
triple up.
To. Triple up. Triple up.
They probably sold out of those pretty quick at a place like Talladega.
Friend of the program, Kyle Armstrong, was saying he picked up a few tins, and he was feeling good over the weekend. Did you see Kyle at all?
No, we never could.
What did you do this whole weekend? Jesus Christ. You didn't see Walker Hayes. You didn't see any late model racing. That's for damn sure, but that wasn't your fault.
Kyle, me and Kyle were always sitting at, like, opposite ends of the track, and that track is so fucking huge. It's like... neither one of us wanted to walk 2 miles.
It is big, yeah.
The opposite direction.
But you were there for the Xfinity race. You got there in time for that.
I was. So we got there, went to the gypsy tents first. They were fucking terrible. Like,
really?
We didn't find anything. And there weren't that many of them. I was very disappointed. And Brian, I did not get you a shirt because I didn't see those guys at all. I didn't even see anyone wearing those shirts, which at Talladega... I usually see, like, a big groups of people wearing those shirts. So.
The trend is over.
Well, I got my Darlington tickets all this weekend, so maybe I'll find them.
Very cool.
That weekend, so. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So, yeah, you were at the race.
We're a bust. Yeah. Xfinity race, we were sitting down in turn 4.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Clayton and
turn 4?
Well, that's where we sit.
You can sit anywhere.
Well, no, Xfinity Race has assigned seating at Talladega. Eventually we moved.
Yeah.
But at first we went to our seats to meet up with some friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we walked for the final stage. No, after stage 1, we're like, okay, let's walk down to our other friends that were sitting way down on the front stretch near the start-finish line.
You got there by the time the cup race started.
It took us the entire stage 2 to walk from turn 4 all the way down to start-finish line.
Jeez.
That place is fucking massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the biggest track I've ever seen is Charlotte. So I can't even imagine what it's like to have to walk like a full mile and a half to get down to the other side of the grandstands.
The walk back after the race was the worst.
Yeah.
At that point, I'm tired, I'm cold, I'm hungry, and we had bought like a plate of fries covered in cheese and meat.
Mm.
And we were like, oh, well, we'll just carry this back to the truck and we'll eat when we get there because there's just like,
what are you fucking making?
There's like horns.
What are you doing?
We'll take these cheese fries to the dirt track. That makes sense.
Just to the truck. I just wanted to like sit inside somewhere warm.
Yeah. So it was cold the whole weekend?
Relatively? It wasn't cold till like the end of the Xfinity race. And the Xfinity race just kept having caution after caution after caution. Like, Jesus Christ, get your shit together.
Yeah.
I'm cold and yeah. But I had to carry those cheese fries for like 2 miles, and I've never been more upset with myself.
God, I mean, you could have got a hot dog or something. You could have eaten.
Yeah.
Sisyphus pushing her rock up the mountain for all of eternity.
You get to the truck.
I saw the plate of cheese fries, and that's what I wanted in the moment.
It yeah, sounds great. Yeah.
After a 6-mile walk, the cheese is all congealed and soggy and just
more of a loaf. Yeah.
Cold. Yeah.
for a Jesse Love win as well.
Yeah.
That too. I have a question. On the broadcast, did they ever say anything about Jordan Anderson's car just sitting up pit road in the middle of the race, abandoned?
I did not catch that.
I don't remember that, no.
Well, when they had that final restart at the end, I looked, and Jordan Anderson's car was sitting in his pit box, abandoned. He wasn't in it. The pit box was, like, packed up, and it was just sitting there on pit road, and they restarted the race, and I thought that was...
Huh.
strange.
That's very weird. I mean, I guess it's technically not a safety hazard being on pit road, but still, that's strange. Yeah, you don't see that.
Shame for him. He was having a pretty good day for most of the day, too. But, yeah, I didn't catch why that happened. But that's a damn shame. All of his cars are looking pretty good out there, actually.
That and
SVG had a great day. That was fun to watch.
Yep.
He had a good one. Tommy Joe Martin's team had a good one.
Easily the best race of the weekend as far as NASCAR is concerned.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, Hill got wrecked. It was great.
Yeah, everybody wins, including Jesse Love.
Yes.
Which, by the way, people out there trying to say that he's a lot better than Sheldon Creed, maybe that's true. I don't know. But you can't make that judgment off of fucking Talladega, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he's done good. He did good at, what was it, Atlanta, too? But again, it's still it's a plate track. It's not a fucking drafting track. But we'll see what happens on the other tracks for him.
He's good at wrecking midgets, though, I'll tell you that. So Jesse Love, folks, the future of NASCAR. But he was on door bumper clear this week, and he was fun to listen to when he got a word in. Pretty insightful, I'll say that.
How old is that kid? Yeah. 17?
19.
18.
19 years old. Old enough to drink at Talladega. So
so before we get to Cup, though, so you went to dirt track afterwards?
I did. I went.
Trying to go to the Alabama Gang 100. Did you have to buy a ticket for it, or they let you carry that pile in there for free?
I ate it in the truck before I did my wardrobe change.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had already bought tickets online, so we just kind of went.
Yeah,
straight in.
Probably a smart idea, because I heard that as a lot of short tracks all over the United States, they're still very much stuck in the 80s when it comes to having two old ladies in a fucking portable shed as your ticket booth. And apparently the line was wrapped all the way into Georgia, from what I hear.
Very long line. Yeah.
So smart move there.
Yeah.
And this was your first big time super late model race, right? I know you've seen them before, but
it was. I've seen late models, but not. Not the big boys, not the big timers.
Yeah.
This is my first time at this track, too.
Quite the difference from Talladega, I would imagine. It's only like 300 feet long.
Yeah, you can see the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was very crowded.
Yeah.
It had already started like sprinkling when we got there.
Oh, God, so that sucks.
We were like looking at the radar and we knew it was coming. But I did get to watch the late models run their heat races.
They were pretty good.
And, Larson was there. That was cool. That was my first time seeing him on dirt.
Oh.
And for as much as I am a Kyle Larson hater through and through in the Cup series, I am a fan of him on dirt. So it was cool.
Yeah, he's pretty handy in the late model. Kay Dillard spanked him in that heat. But that's to be expected, I suppose.
Yeah. I had some sprint cars there too.
Yeah, wasn't Briscoe and Stenhouse both ran?
Stenhouse. Yeah. So that was fun, but they only ran a couple heats, I guess. But
well, save your ticket, because they're doing it in like September.
Your ticket until September. Yeah, the website said hold on to your wristband; it'll get you back in. Okay, let me tuck that away.
Yeah, let me tell you, dude. I already have a couple of wristbands up on the refrigerator from trying to go out to the track this year. I'll be seeing the tri-track modifieds in like fucking November at Thompson. So they will let you back in. They're not lying.
Well, I can't go to that date in September, so.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Thanks for nothing.
Would have been a good show. Yeah, I know that a lot of people kind of pissed off the World Outlaws for fumbling that a little bit. I don't know why you wouldn't just move hot laps up to 5 o'clock. No one cares. No one wants to see that shit, you know. Yeah. Except for me, but, who cares? Like.
Yeah, I mean, they were efficient in getting, like, the heat races out there very quickly. Like, as soon as the cars were pulling out from one heat race, the cars for the next heat race were already coming in the other end. So
definitely
trying to get it in.
Yeah, you would have seen Bobby Pierce win probably anyway. So we'll see how it goes in September. But
there was a very angry man sitting behind us who was just screaming his brains out to like get the race going, because they did take like this brief little intermission between heat races and the main race, and this dude was losing his fucking mind telling them to just start the race because the rain's coming. But
I was kind of toggling back and forth between the high limit race and that, and I kept checking in on the Outlaws, and I thought they were just wetting the track down like a motherfucker. I didn't know there was a delay going. I was like, damn, it's saturated. And then you told me that it was over, and then I got upset. So True Love broke me the news. But we'll get a rain check at some point this year if we go to World Finals or elsewhere. We'll make sure you get some good late model action in this year.
Yeah, I need a full race.
Well, at least it didn't rain on Sunday, because I know we were all pretty nervous about that. I mean, obviously it did rain a little bit, but not enough to really, not enough to screw the race up, other than a couple weeper spins by Denny Hamlin and our pal Corey LaJoy, who he had a hell of a race on Sunday, which we'll get to that. But any interesting stories from camping out or
so what'd you do
before the race?
Yeah, what'd you do after the shit got rained out?
Well, so we didn't camp. We got a hotel because we're elderly and we wanted a shower after the dirt race.
Yeah,
and it was pouring rain, and no one wants to camp in the rain. So our hotel was like 45 minutes away, so we just went to the hotel early. Originally, the plan was to do the dirt race, and then we were going to go to the boulevard to see the Applebee's guy and to, you know, take in the sights.
Get that video, you know, for the show. Yeah.
But it was going to be pouring rain nonstop the rest of the night. We were like, I don't want to go walk around in the rain with a bunch of drunk people. So
Well, I saw some strippers doing their thing, and that those clips got viral online. So I mean, people were still definitely partying.
Yeah, the rain did not deter the shirts from coming off, that's for sure. And I got to see some of that on the internet as well. So
my buddy Clayton, who we met up with the next day, him and his friends are much younger, so they can do shit like that.
They can get wet.
They went out,
without turning into gremlins.
Yeah. I guess they went out to the boulevard Saturday night, and they said that, like, as soon as they got there, there was this very, very large man on a stretcher, and they were trying to resuscitate him, and he was not responsive. So I think people die in the Talladega infield every year, and I don't know why it never makes the news, but people definitely die in the infield every single year.
Yeah,
like
probably they try to keep that quiet.
We met some people earlier this year who camp on the boulevard every year, and they were telling us some wild stories about people they've seen die. If you're not prepared to die, don't go to Talladega camp in the infield, because there's a chance.
There's always a chance.
I mean, right, literally on Sunday, the cup race, right before the cup race, they're like, you know, that 18-wheeler's hauling ass around with the flag.
Oh, that's right. Weren't you saying that somebody had to get life flighted out?
Yeah, a helicopter came and landed, and they life flighted someone out of the infield right before they dropped the green flag.
Jesus.
So, well, take your liquid IV.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Fuck.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it out alive. That's good.
That's a plus. Well, okay, so you survived.
I did survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before the cup race, though, they also ran. I don't know if they showed this on the broadcast, but they ran Davey Allison's car and Dale Jarrett's car around the track.
That's cool. I did not see that.
Yeah. But it was a little, made me feel a little weird seeing Davey's car go by, and then they pulled it into the Xfinity garage area right in front of us, which I know his helicopter crashed
right there,
right behind there. And it drove right by the other helicopter that's like on and life-flighting someone out, and like seeing all that together, I was like, this makes you feel a little weird, but
Well, to be fair, I'm sure the pilot of the helicopter was a lot more skilled than Davey was, unfortunately.
Not his first rodeo.
Well, I'm gonna have a little shot for Davey Allison here. I can't talk about that guy without getting sad, so
Sorry, I brought the mood down with a bunch of deaths.
No, it's the death toll for the weekend.
Jesus.
Which fortunately did not include Eric Jones because he took a pretty big hit, but we're not quite to that part of the show just yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, here's to Davey Allison. Jesus Christ.
So, I mean, the race itself was definitely a normal Talladega race, and I think a lot like the other plate races of the year, there was some controversy and cars running 4 or 5 seconds off the pace to save fuel. And
Ryan just trying to dig this show out of the hole right now.
Listen, we gotta continue here. This can't be all doom and gloom.
No, I can't.
Give a PSA that if you're not prepared to die,
don't go to Talladega.
For everyone's on safety.
It's race day, bitch. you're about to get to the point of how slow the pack was running, and I do want to ask you, True Love, because and I'll share my opinions on this in a second here, which might surprise you, but is there a noticeable difference on the track when these guys are running around at 170 miles an hour?
I wouldn't say I could notice, like, speed-wise, because when you're there, there's, like, this certain, you know, built-in intensity of having the cars fly by in a pack, and, you know, there's a whole, you know, energy to it. But when no one's making moves for that long, that's when it's kind of like, okay, what are we doing here?
How many people were stoked for BJ McLeod to burn his gas and run up front?
Just me.
Just you.
There was a contingent online.
I was losing my shit. I was so happy for him, excited to see that.
Yeah.
I will also admit I was, because I know he got off sequence and was laps down, but I was really hoping for a caution with like 10 to go so he can get back on the lead lap and maybe get up there. Not that he would have won probably, but he could have weaved his way through. He's fairly good at doing that. So he could have at least gotten a better finish than he did, but at least he didn't wreck the car. So that's a plus.
Yeah. Definitely cool to see a completely unsponsored car out there running in the pack though. Up front, especially him. I was about to throw the jersey on. I got a BJ McLeod team shirt down here ready for when the good stuff happens. And I even placed a bet on him. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going for it. Maybe they rented a fucking Hendrick engine or something. Maybe he's not just burning his fuel up. And as soon as I place my bet, he puts it in the fence and speeds by. So I do want to put an apology out there to BJ. I feel like maybe that was a little bit my fault as well. And maybe the other people out there on DraftKings placing mid-race bets. But, don't listen to my gambling advice ever. Just I'm never going to talk about it on the show. I'm real dumb when it comes to that shit. So... no scoring pylon either, True Love. How did that affect you while you were out there? I mean, they're all running together, I guess.
To this whole conversation. Okay. So the pylon deal. I will say I don't like not having the pylon, but Talladega has added extra giant TV screens. So no matter where you're sitting, you have a TV screen that's big enough for you to be able to see it. But
that's cool.
That screen only shows the top five drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't show any replays on that screen. So
really?
That sucked too. So like that stage one or whatever where Chase and Cindric finished so close, the top five that they had listed Chase as the winner. And then, like, 30 seconds after it ended, they were like, just kidding. They swapped it to Cindric winning. But they never showed a replay.
Ooh.
And same thing in the Xfinity race on Saturday. They never showed a replay of that Allgaier wreck. There was just,
really?
I don't know. It was frustrating. But Talladega also is good about having speakers, like, every fucking 20 feet blasting.
I guess MRA you could actually broadcast. Hear what's going on as well, because they're all packed up.
Yeah. But
I'm going to buy you a Bearcat scanner. They're like $60. I'll get you a scanner, dude. it's the only way to fly.
Well, I have rented a scanner at Talladega before and ended up not needing it because the speakers there are so loud.
Oh, nice.
With the broadcast, but...
If a track has like decent Wi-Fi or at least halfway decent phone reception. I've been using the app for that scanner and it works okay. At the very least has MRN on, and but yeah, it does work at the track, so that's nice, but it's definitely not as solid as a scanner.
Yeah. 460.000 folks. That's your frequency.
This is my fifth time at Talladega, and the first four times my phone has been a useless brick on race day at that track. Like, once everyone gets there, my phone doesn't send texts. There's no way any apps are opening.
You were texting us, though, which I was surprised.
This year, before this race, they must have way up their Wi-Fi coverage, because my phone worked like an absolute charm all weekend long. Like, I could open it up any apps, text. So they have improved that, but I still don't want to be sitting on my phone the whole time,
right,
trying to look at updates.
Denny talked about that on his show, and he was saying that he thought his phone regular reception worked better than the Wi-Fi, but like, he was talking about how he was watching on his phone because, you know, he got wrecked out and he's waiting to see the finish and delays and all that shit.
Yeah,
and
Denny became a fan after a while. Yeah. But yeah, I wish they put that back. I love the pylon at other tracks. Again, I know Talladega's a little different. And
yeah, Talladega's a little different. Going to Vegas earlier this year, if Vegas ever took their pylon down, I wouldn't have had one single fucking clue what was going on, because there's no TV screen, nothing. No, you know, cell service was bad. So if a track like Vegas took it down, I'd be lost, like, you know, lap count and shit like that. So
That's cool to hear the Wi-Fi was working, though. That's definitely a change.
A true miracle. Yeah. Well, you know, people need cell service to be able to call the Life Flight people.
Yeah, I can't make outgoing calls on my scanner, that's for sure. So.
No.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was a race. Toyota's fucked their own day up, I think, thanks to John Hunter Nemechek.
Cool push from John Hunter Nemechek there.
And
all on Jerry Chen there.
Speaking of that incident, it seems like Eric Jones literally like 10 minutes ago posted a video on Instagram, and I can't listen to it, but apparently it seems like he's going to be out this weekend. That's what all the comments are saying, that he's hurt.
No shit.
Yeah.
Did y'all hear his onboard radio?
Oh, it's awful.
That was awful. That was hard to listen to.
Yeah. He sounded, and again, like, you never know, like, it could just be he got the wind knocked out of him, but you know, to come out of the care center and then immediately go back to the hospital, that's never a good sign.
Not a good sign, but at least it's not a head injury. It seems like it's a back thing, which sucks, but I'd much rather have a back injury than a head injury, just knowing the history of those, but hopefully it's nothing serious and maybe he'll just be out a week or two, so.
Yeah, ugh, awful though. That was a bad, bad hit. Definitely changed the mood down here in the bar, and I wouldn't talk about anything else for the rest of the afternoon, so.
Yeah, when they towed that truck by us in turn four and I saw the front of it, I was like, holy fuck, what happened over there?
Yeah. Well, I hadn't heard anything about
Eric. Never had a replay, though, so, you know.
I hadn't heard any information beyond what you just told me, so that's a shame to hear. I think we're all Eric Jones fans here on the show. He's definitely a cool guy and a pretty damn good race car driver at that, so it sucks to see him be out for a week if that does come into fruition.
Yeah.
I will say I've never heard a more united crowd go up, erupt into cheers as when Denny Hamlin spun getting on the pit road. Crowd lost its mind.
Yeah, I like that too. But as much as I've sort of turned my opinion on Denny Hamlin, I definitely let out a little yeehaw when that happened.
And in the same vein, also people throwing beer cans onto the track afterwards just because a Hamlin-owned car won. Now, some people were just drunk and like, hey, I want to throw my beer, but I heard a couple Hamlin haters throwing for that reason, which is dumb. But
sadly, this one has got more attention than anything else this year because of Michael Jordan being involved, so let's maybe learn how to promote the drivers a little bit better.
I don't know if it's gotten as much. I think maybe just the fact that Jordan was there gets a little bit different coverage, but I mean, compared to like Atlanta and stuff, I don't think I don't think this was as big of a moment for the sport. I mean, it was obviously really cool just to see Michael there and finally getting to celebrate and whatnot. And,
yeah, for sure.
Seeing how confused Tyler's son was in Michael's arms, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Yeah.
But the president of this country is literally holding you at this point.
but before we get to that, though, we got to talk about the end. Michael McDowell pulling off the fucking block of the year and taking out half the field, which
that was killer.
You know, I guess you kind of saw that happening. You know, usually it's like Keselowski or fucking Logano doing something like that. And I don't know what the hell McDowell was thinking. Cause I mean, that first block, it's like he got away clean. And then it's like, I don't know. He came across like four lanes and then that was it. It was just so stupid. But it's Talladega. That type of shit happens every year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If I was in his shoes, as a non-race car driver, I don't really see how else you do that. Like, the bottom lane has the momentum. Like, you got to try and dip back down in front of the guy who's been helping you for the past 30 laps. But, that was pretty bad. Yeah. But we got to have the conversation, though. We brought it up a few minutes ago about how slow they were going. How do you guys feel about that? I know True Love, you said at the track, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference because they're packed up. But I know a lot of people online are pissed about it. And yeah, I don't know.
But it still sucks, like, being there and not seeing them, like, you know, make moves.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, riding it out.
I think it's just the state of plate racing. I mean, it's not like guys didn't just ride around in packs for years prior to this. Just now it seems like you've added fuel economy into the equation and it just makes it even more stupid and more boring. So here's
the surprise. I didn't hate that, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, equipment preservation and fuel savings have been part of racing as long as racing has been a thing. So as long as the broadcast is able to articulate what's happening on track, I like the idea that somebody can, like, kind of tear through, like BJ did. You know, he can tear up front and he can lead some laps, and obviously it didn't work out for him, but I would rather see that than what we saw 5 years ago when everyone just ran in a single file line. And again, I guess there's not much difference between that and two lanes, but the fact that they have the ability to actually carve through and try and set themselves up, as long as the broadcast is explaining what's happening here, like, we're not going to fix the car. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to do anything to make the car any better. So we're kind of stuck in this box right now with what we have for how these races are going to run. So as long as you can make it a show, as far as the broadcast is concerned, I don't necessarily have a problem with this because it's going to end up in a wreck on the last lap anyway. Like, that's just how this shit goes. Yeah. So just shut up and enjoy the race. I don't know. That's my two cents on it. Yeah. It sucks to see him go around at 170 miles an hour. And, like, even my friends down here in the basement were – they're not racing guys at all, and they were able to pick up on that. So that does suck. But, you know, if you're able to explain what the strategy is going on, then suddenly it's exciting again. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of plate racing to begin with anymore. Like, it's kind of lost me in the past 5 to 6 years, especially with this new car, for all the reasons we just laid out. But, you know, it's not changing anytime soon. So they better figure out how to present this to people in a way that actually makes sense. Because you can make anything exciting. MRN makes the worst races exciting.
Yeah.
So as long as you can present this as what it is, it's still a fucking... I mean, Eric Jones is going to be out, apparently. This is a dangerous fucking thing these guys are doing. So I feel like as long as you're able to convey what's going on, then, you know, whatever, you know.
I did see a clip of Hamlin on his podcast saying that if they change the length of that race down to, like, 400, then it would change the lengths of the stages, and then the fuel thing wouldn't be... Yeah. As much as of an issue.
But the problem is the Daytona 500 is the biggest race of the year, and they're not going to make that the Daytona 400.
Daytona 400. No one wants that.
But. So,
he also suggested maybe even doing a fourth stage instead of shortening the race, which, again, I guess could work. And it's not like you don't do that at Charlotte for the 600, but, you know, do you want another stage break? I don't know. It's not my call, and it is what it is. So I'm kind of just with Rob, like, you know, we got to deal with it as fans.
Yeah. Again, as long as the what's actually happening is able to be portrayed to fans of all levels, you know, then I'm okay with it, I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's fair. But, one thing, another driver I want to talk about real quick that had a great weekend, probably, I mean, between the two races, there were only a couple guys that ran them both, and Anthony Alfredo managed to get top tens in both of them. So yep. Shout out to him. Shout out to Beard Motorsports and
the pride of Ridgefield, Connecticut, wherever the fuck that is. No idea where that is, but yeah. It was so funny. Like my buddy down in the basement with me, I was like, "Oh, he's a Connecticut guy. You seen him at Thompson?" And I was like, "Nope, sure haven't." That's not how he rolls. So, but yeah, apparently Anthony's a great guy, and it was cool to see him. And it's always cool to see the 62 up there. They kind of save it for the plate races, and they always do pretty well in them. So that was definitely cool to see. Yeah, two top tens out of a weekend like that.
I did see his sponsor everywhere this weekend. Dude Wipes was passing out. Dude Wipes.
Thank God.
All over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick up those samples, folks. Yeah.
You don't have to be a dude either. It's just marketing. That's all it is.
Clean it. Clean it off. Clean it all off. You know, do your best. We all gotta sit next to each other. So.
Yeah. So yeah. Any final notes, True Love, from your weekend there?
A couple of things. So our seats down in turn four, again, we were behind my buddy Clayton, and he was with a big group of his friends, younger. And they had this one guy with him. I can't remember his name for the life of me. But all weekend, he had this, like, giant fold-up map of the speedway. And I don't know what level of, like, alcohol and drugs he was on, but, like, all day Saturday and Sunday, he would just, like, stand down there with this map, watching the cars go by and like pointing like, oh, here they are now, and just like following them. And when he came back on Sunday, he still had
the map. And he was like, one of these dudes like stopping off at fucking concession stands and shit. Like.
But on Sunday he came back, he still had the map, but it was like torn and disheveled, and he was covered in mud, like head to toe, like same clothes as the day before. But
that
still
tracks,
had the map
my
out
man.
There.
That tracks.
Yeah.
The map
he got
clearly
kicked
didn't
out of
help.
Grandstands at one point for smoking cigarettes in the grandstands, but oh. he seemed like he was having a good time.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after the race on Sunday, we just kind of hung out in the parking lot with my buddy Eric from Canada. And his brother and dad, just waiting for the traffic to clear. And the parking lot we were in was, like, empty towards the end. We were still just kind of hanging out, shooting the shit. And there was this one child who had to be, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old, by himself in the parking lot, and had started a small fire that he was tending.
That is amazing. He will do well for the rest of his life at Talladega.
Yeah, so that was great. So, yeah, got to take Andy to his first Talladega, and he had a great time. So.
Good. That was my next question was, what did he think?
Yeah. He's not a partier, but he definitely enjoyed it and is looking forward to going back and getting more of a full experience next time without the rain and shit. But
hell yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, overall, great weekend.
Very nice.
Never a bad weekend at a racetrack.
That is correct. Yeah, for sure. It's never a bad time.
Do we have any other? I'm trying to think of any other notes from the weekend. Let's just do the DARF of the week here before we get into the other nonsense.
Yeah, our DARF of the week definitely came from Talladega this week. And again, we're back to just fully focusing on YouTubers and influencers right now. And our boy from Black Flags Matter has certainly, I don't know if this is a shit post or not, Brian, you have a better gauge on this than I do.
I think he's just an idiot because he posts so many fucking stupid things. Like, I stopped paying attention to this kid a very long time ago, especially when everybody just started criticizing him for just literally just reading Wikipedia articles and making videos out of him.
Yep.
But like, he just posts a lot of dumb bullshit. So I think this is him trying to be sincere and saying, here's the tweet, folks. My parents had Dale Sr. My generation had Dale Jr. This generation has Austin Hill. Now, the math on that is just awful, first off, because like, he's won a couple, or, you know, he's a good plate race driver.
He's
that's
great
fine.
At it. There's
but,
no question.
But, but I mean, it's only an Xfinity, first off. Second off, like, he's not an Earnhardt. Yeah. I mean, he's driving for Childress, so there's that.
But I was
like,
saying to you guys, like, if he said Jeffrey, I would have been like, yeah, absolutely. We have Jeffrey Earnhardt. Yeah. That's how far this country has fallen.
But, yeah, that checks out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could make that reference in a couple years after he's won a couple cup races, but I... Even then, it's still a stupid thing to fucking say, and I didn't even see any criticism he got for that, but I hope he got a lot of it because it was awful.
Yeah, real dumb. Yeah. So yeah. You're definitely our dart for the week, bud. I'm going to suspend your YouTube account for 1 week, and then we'll see if you rethink your choices, which you won't. So.
On to the notes. Right. So was there what race was it in Long Beach this week?
Oh, it was IndyCar. IndyCar. Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, which again, I'm a big IndyCar fan. Maybe not apparently because
I was going to say that wasn't mentioned by you at all this weekend. I didn't hear anything from anybody about that race.
And this is the point I'm about to make here. As an IndyCar fan and someone who is obsessed with the 500, there's only one race that even comes close on the IndyCar schedule to matching the prestige of the 500. It's still quite a gulf, but like the Long Beach Grand Prix is a huge fucking deal. Mm-hmm. And it was on at the same time as Talladega, which it always is, whatever, you know, and usually I'll flip back and forth. But again, I had people down here in the bar, so I didn't want to be that guy, you know, remote wrangling all night, you know, and I figured I'll watch it on Monday. And I got to the end of Talladega and through the night, got shit house, woke up the next morning, and realized like, I don't know who won this race. I seriously have no idea who won the Grand Prix. I'm excited. And then yesterday I planned on watching the full race. I got five laps in and then some shit came up and I couldn't finish it. I still don't know who won the Long Beach Grand Prix. I couldn't fucking tell. It's the second biggest race of the year. It's completely sold out every year. They draw hundreds of thousands of people out to this thing. And I follow all the IndyCar teams, most of the drivers, Marshall Pruitt, a lot of... I still have no fucking clue who won this race, and I'm part of their algorithm. Part of the fucking algorithm.
I never saw any Instagram posts or anything about
it. No, I have no clue, and I still don't know. So if someone out there listening to the show wants to tell me who won, I'm going to see how long I can take it to find out who won fucking Long Beach.
I mean, I can spoil it right now.
I mean, if you want to, by all means. Like,
it was Scott Dixon.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. But the fact that I didn't fucking know that as a guy who, like... I get my interest in IndyCar outside of the 500, unfortunately, has kind of crumbled a little bit. And a lot of that has to do with the coverage. And again, like, you know, we do this show, we talk about NASCAR, and short track racing is so easy to watch now that most of my bandwidth goes towards that. But again, like, usually I'm able to find out what the fuck is going on just by opening Instagram. I did not know this until just now that Scott Dixon won that race. So do fucking better. My God, please do better.
I mean, granted, my timeline on Twitter is usually 75% NASCAR stuff, but I mean, if IndyCar stuff is happening, I'll at least see it, and I didn't see any of that at all.
Which is ridiculous, and I don't understand, like, why that is. I don't know. It makes no fucking sense to me. So, yeah, someone has got to do better to try and grow the series and put eyes on this, because the Long Beach race is always pretty damn good, too.
Yeah.
And it's a damn shame to see one of the crown jewel events kind of get lost in the mix on social media versus Talladega, you know, which is, you know, it's a big race in the NASCAR world for sure. But like the fact that like me, again, as a guy who is, I get all kinds, I've been seeing other shit after the race, like rookies who ran for like Arrow McLaren and all that, talking about, well, I really had a good time racing, you know, it's like, I know about that, but I don't know who the fuck won the race until just now. So yeah, do better. Please do better. Jesus Christ.
Brief update on the Eric Jones situation. So he has a compression fracture in his lower vertebrae. Corey Heim's going to be in the car for Dover.
Corey Heim.
Yeah, he is a Toyota guy. And he's week to week as far as when he'll be back in the car. So there's your update.
Damn. Well, that's very similar to what happened to Eric Almirola in the 43 a few years ago at Kansas.
Did John Hunter have to go sit time out at Legacy and apologize to...
I would hope so.
Write an apology letter.
Yeah, John Hunter is Toyota's special boy, so
I don't know why.
I'm sure he probably doesn't feel good about that. It's hard to really blame him for, you know, it wasn't malicious or anything, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a damn shame.
Yep.
Yeah.
In further news, it looks like the IROC series made their announcement for their comeback race. They're going to be at Lime Rock Park in July.
That's right.
What cars did they say they're running?
I don't know exactly. Now, this has become more of a historic event where they're getting IROC cars from different eras. So all the way from the 70s up until, the Trans Am era or whatever, whatever happened when they all had Crown Royal sponsorship, when it was mostly NASCAR guys and Steve Kenser. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I will say this. There was already an all-star race for the Trans Am series that was scheduled for that weekend, and there was a special Trans Am 2 event, a TA2 event, that had a lot of the guys that you would expect to be part of the IROC show to be there. So it seems like that Rage kind of saw who was going to be there and decided this was going to be the weekend for it. Greg Biffle's involved, Jeff Brabham, Ron Fellows, Davey Hamilton, Ron Hornaday, Bobby Labonte's going to be there, Davey Jones, who was an IROC staple back in the day, Paul Menard, amazingly, but he's a Trans Am guy, so that makes sense. Ryan Newman's going to be there, Max Pappas, Boris Said, Ken Schrader, of fucking course he is. Scott Speed, Mike Skinner, and Danny Sullivan, are the guys who are already scheduled to be there. So I would imagine they're going to do some time in some IROC cars too. That's only about 2 hours away from me. I think I kind of have to go see this. I've never been to Lime Rock Park, but every review I've heard of the track is that it's basically short track racing at a road course, and it's very short. It's just a little over a mile. It's a beautiful facility, a lot of history. So I think I'll do my best to come check that out. And again, that weekend is, I got it right in front of me,
July 19th and the 20th.
So yeah, that's gonna be pretty cool. And even for the Trans Am event alone, seeing all those guys out there running in TA2 cars would be pretty fucking sick. And the fact that they're adding the old IROC guys in there, or the cars, that is even cooler. So yeah, definitely much more of a historical bent to things than SRX was, but definitely worth it if you're within any sort of driving distance from Lime Rock, and you'll probably see me there.
Cool. Next up, Tony Stewart's house is back on the market. I know he's been trying to sell this for a minute. It's a 20,000. It's a 20,000 square foot house with basically its own Bass Pro Shops in it, and a casino and a bowling alley and all this other shit. And he wants only $22.5 million for it. So you really wonder why that hasn't sold yet, but it's out there.
Incredible
very
property.
Specific clientele.
Yeah. But we
Pro Shop threw up all in that thing.
We got about 100 listeners regularly, I would say, looking at the stats. So if you guys all want to go in on this and we have us a cool little party house out in the middle of Indiana, then hit us up. I'm happy to, risk the mortgage on that shit because it looks fucking sick.
I just did the math. We'd only have to, for 100 fans of the show, we'd only have to each pony up $225,000. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Three times what my current house is worth.
I live close enough to Boston where my house has some equity. I could probably get a little bit of that. So, yeah, maybe you guys will have to make up the difference. But, yeah, we'll get some people together. We'll live in Indiana together and fucking hunt deer or whatever the fuck happens out there. But definitely a cool property. I'd love to go visit it.
Meemaw over here is going to be sitting in one of those rocking chairs that's in front of the fish tank.
That's what's up. Cracker Barrel style.
And the last little bit of news. So on Sunday in our group chat, I happened to ask the question, like, do you guys think any drivers rip Zins while they're driving? And that led us into some debate. And I think we were all kind of like, yeah, they probably do. And when Tyler Reddick won on Sunday with some forensic viewing of his interview, it was noticed that he definitely had a Zin in his mouth, and maybe even put it in during the interview. I couldn't quite tell.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
So that basically answers a question that there are some drivers doing some Zins out there. The other question was, would Dick Trickle be into Zins? And I don't think he would, personally. I feel like he is a smoker through and through, and you know, granted, Rob, were you a smoker? Because I never was.
Yes.
Like I enjoy Zins, but as a non-smoker,
still
like,
am. I'm just doubling up on the nicotine now.
So which do you prefer then, cigs or Zins?
They're different. They're completely different.
That, but
I Zin for me, and I think I've said this on the show before. Regardless of my behavior this past weekend, it actually really curbs my drinking. Like, I'll come That's down good. In the basement here, I'll throw a record on, throw a race on, whatever, and usually, like, a five-beer night will become a one- or two-beer night with a couple of Zins popped in. So it's a different buzz altogether. I still think Dick, he would have come around, I bet. You throw a little Citrus 6 up in there, I think he would have had a good time.
He definitely would have had a canister or two in his little briefcase that just had chocolates
yeah.
in it.
So. I guess my big question is, when during a race are you able to access your Zins and, like, get that stupid little plastic case open to pop one in? Like, that's my question.
During the ARCA, I forget if it was ARCA or Xfinity, but during one of those races, during a caution break, there was a driver on TV eating a banana during a caution break.
That definitely happened.
There's definitely moments where they could have gotten them. So.
Andy J. Yeah.
I'll miss that. Damn. They're the true potassium. Don't want to like Graham.
You're not supposed to swallow them either, so I imagine, like, getting rid of it would be the bigger issue, but I don't know, stick your little finger in there. I don't know. So if anybody out there listening has any more insight on whether or not this happens, short track, NASCAR, or otherwise, let us know, because I'd love to know who my fellow enthusiasts are out there.
I don't know. I definitely just thought it was hilarious that right after that happened, I look in group chat, and it's like, was he ripping his in? Like, yes, he was.
Yeah, Tyler Reddick definitely was. He got to celebrating immediately, and that's a good way to do it. So,
So I guess that wraps up the news for the week, and that means it's time for the septic tank, Rob.
It sure is.
Get on there.
We've already kind of got into this a little bit because True Love was at one of the events I want to highlight here. The late model show at Talladega was a complete fucking mess the entire weekend. And again, Mother Nature. You know, you can't really blame a series for the weather. That's pretty ignorant to do. But on Friday night, during the late model feature or the prelim night feature, they cut the race short due to rain coming in, brought all the cars in. Max McLaughlin getting his first big time super late model win. He's a local guy, so good for him. Son of Magic Shoes, Mike McLaughlin. So take that one to the bank, folks. But he's running a full year in Super Lates this year. Finally got a win. He's definitely talented. We're going to see a lot more out of him. But they canceled. They cut this race short because of rain. And then literally 10 minutes later, the fucking sprint cars are out there, the 360s, running a full feature. So, which Ricky Stenhouse won, apparently. I didn't watch that because I thought the show was done. Because usually when it rains, that's the end of the night. So, yeah, they cut the late model feature short. We've already talked about what happened on Saturday night. They got the heats in, and then the skies opened up, and they canceled it, moved it all the way back to September. So late model teams all very upset about that. Bobby Pierce in particular, a big fucking surprise because I'm almost certain he would have won that race. But not a great weekend for all the late model fans like me. Over in the high limit sprint car world, Brad Sweet picked up his first two wins in his own series. That was kind of cool. I think the thing that overshadowed everything was that awful wreck, which I sent you guys a video of J-Mac just completely sailing out of the park. And, you know, Salina is a really high banked dirt track. You know, it's a lot steeper than a lot of places, and they just don't have fences in the corner. And so, Brad Sweet got under J-Mac and just sent him off into space. And it was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. Apparently, a lot of drivers are kind of nervous about this because they kind of saw it coming. Because, you know, you're running a fast racetrack like that, and there's no retaining wall or anything up top to keep you from flying out of the ballpark. You kind of know what's going to happen. And it did. It happened twice. Brenham Crouch also exited the park on his own volition. A couple laps later, but if they're gonna keep holding major sprint car races there, maybe invest in a fence, you know, just please. I'm gonna kill somebody. Salina's a cool racetrack though, but Brad Sweet getting a couple wins over the weekend. The other one coming at Southern Oklahoma, a racetrack where you will not get sent to space if you jump the cushion. Let's see what else here. Sheldon Hodenshill won a Paducah, and Brady Bacon picked up a big win at, I don't even know how to say this fucking racetrack name. I heard it all weekend. Hobstadt. But yeah, Brady Bacon it's his second year in a row winning at Hobstadt. So good for him beating out David Gravel. That was a cool race. I'm a big Brady Bacon fan, so it's always cool to see him do well in a winged car. Hudson O'Neill is laying out his plans for sort of, I guess. He's being very cagey about it and not really telling anyone what's going on, but he's definitely going to a Longhorn chassis this year for the rest of the year, which kind of indicates to me he's probably going to stick with the Rumleys which is who also fields cars for Kyle Larson and for Brandon Shepard. And I would imagine he's also going to be a Lucas Oil guy because he hasn't been showing up to the World of Outlaw events. No surprise there. Burt Myers picking up a big modified win at Bowman Gray on opening night. That was a fun show as well. And a quick shout out to Flow Racing and our buddy Matthew Dillner. They're about to debut a brand new documentary called King of the Midgets. And it looks fucking awesome. I don't know if you guys watched the Tony Bettenhausen one that is on YouTube. So if you don't have a Flow subscription, you can watch that in its entirety. That is worth that's worth a watch for sure. The Bettenhausens, of course, a huge family in IndyCar racing as well as sprint car racing. This one focuses on Mel Kenyon and Rich Vogler, two of the greatest of all time to ever do it. And any documentary that features a lot of 80s midget and sprint car racing is something I'm going to watch out. So make sure you keep your eyes on that. I think they're holding a premiere party at a theater somewhere this week. It might even be today. But that'll be coming out in Flow pretty soon, and I cannot recommend you checking that out as soon as it hits YouTube or if you're a subscriber as soon as it's on Flow. I'll definitely be watching that. There was a cars race. Once again, I know out of all the series that we talk about on here, I just don't watch it for some reason. And I know most of the fan base out here probably gets news from cars more than anywhere else. Don't know who won that either, but that's my own fault and has nothing to do with the social
Scott
media.
Dixon.
Scott Dixon won the cars feature. And unfortunately, I will not be going to the Arrowhead World of Outlaws late model race this weekend. My parents want to get to Branson a day earlier than expected, so I will not be going to the racetrack. But I will be getting to see some good country music that night. So, yeah, it could be worse. But you will not see me in Oklahoma this weekend. But a lot of good short track racing coming up this weekend as well. High Limit's happening tonight. Again, we're recording, so it'll be old news by the time this episode airs, and I know for a fact that you'll find out about that on social media because they're pretty good about posting who wins their races. But we're gonna go ahead and flush the short track septic tank down unless anyone else has anything to say.
Brent Cruz won the cars.
Brent Cruz, how about it?
Good for him. Whoever that is.
Thank you, True Love.
Flush him on there.
And by the way, our special little link that we always talk about is just gone now. So, yeah, sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, it's wrestling fans fucked it up yet again.
Yeah,
so,
it was good while it lasted, and I'm sure something else will pop up. I'll try and figure out a way to sort of consolidate it for everybody. But if there is anything you're interested in watching, hit us up anyway, and I'll do what I can to find a link for it. Because, again, like, short track season is in full swing here. And, yeah, there's a lot of good shit coming up. The World of Outlaws going to Knoxville coming up. Not the Nationals, obviously, but the first big World of Outlaw event there of the year. Curious to see how many High Limit guys end up over there. And also, quick shout-out to Jacob Allen, who's having a really good year. I'm a big fan of his. I got his hat on right now. I know the tank's been flushed already, but we're going to leave this one floating for until next week.
All right, and with that, it is time for the video of the week, and this is the second installment for the year of the history of monster truck racing, and this time around, we went with a USHRA race, which they were pretty much the competitors for TNT at the time, and really the other big monster truck slash pulling mud racing federation, whatever you want to call it. This was a show that happened at the Seattle Kingdome, and I'm going to start this off by saying that this is probably one of the more boring races I've watched in a while as far as monster truck stuff goes, but unfortunately, in my research, I know last week we mentioned the Worcester race we were going to watch, but in reviewing that, so again, rather than go through everything that happened in here, I'm going to talk a little bit about just the promotions part of it, because USHRA at this time, you know, TNT was establishing themselves as a straight line, straight up monster truck racing series with really no other sideshow events. You know, TNT was started through the TNT pulling series, and then they kind of branched off and started doing separate events, whereas USHRA at this point, they were still kind of an exhibition type company. Like, there wasn't like a specific racing series, and the reason why I switched to this show over the Worcester was once I actually was going through the Worcester tape, That was only a monster truck exhibition, because at the time they were still doing pulling, they were still doing mud racing. Sometimes they didn't have enough room in some of these events to do actual racing, so they just have cars do like wheel stands over, or just have trucks do wheel stands over cars and
well,
shit.
I'll be honest, so when you brought that video up, I was very curious to see what it was all about, because the DCU Center, which is what it's called now, was the Centrum back in the day, is very small. It's a hockey rink.
Yeah.
I was very curious to see how they would pull that off, and I guess they didn't, so...
Well, I'll get into that a little bit when I explain kind of how this whole series worked, but I think last season we watched a show from the Pontiac Silverdome, and it was sort of similar to that as far as how this event was structured, but a little different. Now, what was the main difference with this one is it had mud racing, and in actuality, this is kind of more of a mud racing video than a monster truck video. And additionally, I learned through the video that this was apparently the first televised mud racing drag racing event that was shown, because
like
I'd seen
Jeeps.
Clips. A lot of Jeeps. We'll talk about that, but apparently, again, this was the first. I'd seen clips before, and this was the first time they had side-by-side mud racing on TV. And it was still very early on as far as the mud racing, I don't want to say industry, but I mean mud racing as a genre was concerned. I know in one of the earlier videos we had some mud bog stuff in there. Mud racing as an event like this... It was not so much about the depth and just getting through the pit. It's more just kind of flying over top of it. As this sport progressed, it got a little more interesting. And I actually liked it when they went to the smaller arenas and just did single runs, because in the smaller arenas, it wasn't just run as fast as you can through the pit. It was actually, you had to get through fast and then also stop. There was like a specific line you had to stop by. Here, that wasn't the case. It was just very early on. Like Rob said, tons of Jeeps in this. The longer wheelbase dragster style mud racers weren't quite yet in vogue, so you saw a couple of them here, but a lot of them didn't necessarily have the best runs. The mud pit itself was pretty thick and got rutted pretty fast, and you saw some pretty reckless runs towards the end of the event, with guys almost flipping and running through finish line poles and shit like that.
Particularly that left stage left lane, I guess, or the right if you're watching it from above.
I mean you could see there was a massive like rut kicking you to the right in the middle of it. Some of the guys were able to get through it just fine, but a lot of them weren't. Looking through the highlights, though, like I said, tons of Jeeps. At one point, one of the Jeeps runs into what is quoted as a $4,000 tripod, which that is not true. I don't think there's a tripod that exists that's $4,000, so that's some bullshit.
definitely crushed it, though.
There were two different women in the field. They got some slightly condescending commentary from the one male announcer there, but this was 1988, so I guess that's to be expected, unfortunately. There was a really the name Big Daddy's Toy 2 was probably the grossest name of all the mud racers. I absolutely hated that.
I hated to hear that every time it was uttered.
It was just awful. But it was it's interesting. We'll do some more USHRA events later on as, we progress through the history. But the stuff that happens in the arenas where they only have a couple, like 50 feet to stop, like that stuff gets cool. Granted, it's only single runs, but it's way more interesting. And by then, the cars themselves were way more technologically advanced. They had way crazier bodies, crazier names, shit like that. So we'll get to that stuff down the road. As far as monster trucks and the other stuff is concerned, you could pretty clearly tell that there was a full pulling event that happened during the same event itself, but they didn't show that here. They only did highlights of a couple funny car pullers, which were kind of their own special attraction. Like, there weren't that many of them. I know there was one that was just straight up a legit funny car that they just added a bunch of weight to, and that didn't have the best run. But then you had the Virginian, which was a puller owned by Dale Watson, who also owned the Virginia Giant Monster Truck, and that thing was very clearly, even though it was a funny car, it was designed to pull, and that had the much better run for that little exhibition there between the two.
For all my country music fans out there, that is not the same Dale Watson as
that's exactly where my mind went.
The coiffed, white-haired man out there ripping the Telecasters.
Yes,
this is a different man altogether.
Much different man.
Be cooler if it was, but a cool guy in his own right, for sure.
Now, as far as the monster truck stuff is concerned, this was pretty similar to the 87 show from Pontiac that we watched. I think it was a lot of the same trucks, but this time around, there weren't really as many technical failures. Like, all the trucks, aside from Dale Watson did have in his one run, he had some sort of issue where the truck shit the bed and he jammed his hand or something in there. But as far as the structure of the event goes, it was very odd because you had both a straight line drag racing event and a turning drag racing event, which I don't know why they did two of them. And again, because this was so early on in monster truck racing, like the courses weren't equal. Like one driver crisscrossed from one side of the track to the other on the inside, and the other one had to go all the way around. So it was a much longer track. So really not an equal playing field. You had, you know, Bigfoot, Barefoot, obviously two of the biggest names at the time, along with, you know, Virginia Giant and Hot Stuff. Bigfoot pretty much dominated this event. The very end was very strange with the drag racing. They didn't even do a final round. They all just had the trucks just, whichever one had the fastest time at the end was the winner, which was very bizarre to me. Like, I don't know why they didn't do, like, a final round for that. And then Bigfoot had the opportunity to race the Barefoot tank at the end. This was at the time period, too, where monster tanks were kind of becoming in vogue. And there were only a handful of them, so there wasn't ever, like, a straight-up monster tank racing event. But they would do events like this where they'd race a monster truck at the end. And it just ended up being the Barefoot tank and the Barefoot monster truck racing each other at the end. Bigfoot said it was unfair, so he didn't want to race him. Overall, not again, this is still so early on in the history of monster trucks that you could tell that USHRA was trying to figure out how to reformat their event. You could see in the audience was not that big. Granted, this was Seattle, so monster trucks and stuff weren't probably necessarily as popular up there. But later on throughout the series history, they kind of condensed their programs down. You know, they ran smaller arenas. They did a more traditional straight line and also circular monster truck racing. When they ran arenas, what they would do is they'd have the trucks two separate sides of the cars, and basically each truck would do a loop around the entire course, and whoever had the fastest time won. A cool exhibition event, but really not one that represents like what was going on in monster truck racing, because TNT at this point was already a full-fledged racing series and, right, and much more legit. So it was cool, but if you can go through and look at the USHRA events from 88 and even 89 to an extent, and you can see the formats are different all over the place depending on what arena they were in and who was showing up. So another cool historical piece, but we'll definitely probably see some more exciting stuff in the next installment of this series. So any thoughts from you guys?
I mean, I'm all about the Jeeps. That was fun. I know it's not monster trucks, but the amount of jeans being worn by the guys in the drag racing was pretty cool.
Fire suits were not really a thing with, like, safety equipment and monster truck shit and mud racing. It wasn't existent up until the 90s. I mean, the drivers, especially with monster trucks back then, I mean, their main safety equipment was a kidney belt and then a one of those neck braces to prevent whiplash. But some of these guys weren't even running 5-point harnesses at the time, which is fucking crazy. So,
but yeah, pretty much if you had a Jeep in this event, you had a lighter vehicle, you could get across the mud in these drag races. My other favorite part of this was that guy Steve Loesch driving a Jeep just called CJ5, which is literally what it was. which you know, maybe he misunderstood the assignment. You give your Jeep a cool name, but no, he just put down exactly what it was and went out there and did it. So but yeah, it was, I enjoyed this one. Again, pretty light in the monster truck stuff. Definitely seemed a little bit more of like kind of a, not a sideshow event. I don't want to, like, you know, disqualify it too hard. But yeah, running a funny car inside of an arena to do tractor pull stuff was definitely a choice, and it was cool to see. But yeah, to back up Brian's point about how they're still trying to figure out how to put on a show for people, this is a very good example of that. But I enjoyed this one a lot.
Cool. What about you, True Love?
I kind of had to breeze through because, you know, Talladega and then straight into this. So, but a lot more, I wasn't expecting so much mud racing. I was like, oh, Brian picked out a monster truck show. And then I put it on, I was like, or the monster truck.
Yeah, that was, yeah. I mean, I don't want to call that a happy accident, but I did want to do something with mud racing at some point, because yeah. I do think, especially in this period of time with monster trucks and that whole world of motorsports, it was a pretty cool sideshow event, and it gets yeah. way more interesting throughout the years. But, I mean, that's where, like, Tom Mentz from Maximum Destruction came from, was right. mud racing. So it gets more interesting, and we'll see some of that stuff later on. But, yeah, this was... more mud racing than I expected necessarily.
Yeah, definitely cool though.
I always love the names that they pick out, and there were some great crowd shots too. Yeah.
Except for the one name that we all will not say again on the yeah. show because that was really gross.
Yes.
Bog Hog, sure. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Mighty Rat. I'm like, what? Why? Okay.
I remember when I was a kid, one of the early ones I went to in Albany, like there were two mud racers that when I saw the sheet with the entries, I was, as a 6 year old, I was incredibly excited to see. And one was Hellfire and the other one was Ass Kicker. So we'll probably see those ones pop like, up later on.
Yeah. Cuss words.
Yeah. So I mean, that wraps up this installment. We'll get to another monster truck video later on in the season, but for this coming week, I had a few videos highlighted, but I'm going with two different ones here.
Drum roll, please. There's been a lot of we don't even know what it's going to be. Much like the winner of the IndyCar race in Long Beach, we don't know what this is going to be.
You know,
it's a video about Scott Dixon.
So we've talked about this in passing, and there's even been a couple clips of it here and there, but we're going to watch the 1991 All-Stars of Speed softball game. The stars of NHRA and NASCAR go head-to-head. I forget which video it was shown, but I think, like, I don't know if it was John Force or somebody else, like, almost took Davey Allison's head off or something. Like, there was some clip where, like, guys were playing way too rough. And I did skim through this video. It has interviews with drivers, and it's not just, like, a straight-up hour-long game. In saying that, though, I was looking up charity racing games. There are multiple full softball games featuring, like, NASCAR versus IMSA and, like, Busch North Stars play this whole fucking game. I don't know who wants to watch that. I'm not gonna make you guys watch that, but they're out there. If you want to see a 35-year-old softball game, on YouTube.
I know at least one of you has watched the entirety of the fucking Corey LaJoy kickball tournament, so perhaps we're opening up a whole new window for you to view these guys through. So.
Mm-hmm. And the other video I found it's just really short little window into the past of short track racing, but this coming weekend is opening weekend for my home track, Lebanon Valley Speedway, and I was looking for just some random clips to show, and what I found was a video called Faxon Racing All Fired Up. Now, this channel that I found is just some guy from a town called Chatham, New York, which was a little bit south of Albany, and a town I spent a ton of time in growing up. Like, it's not accessible anymore, but there's a pretty well-known cliff diving spot in that town, and a well-known fair, like a summer fair, happens there every year. So I spent a lot of time in this town, and I found this little video of just some behind the scenes, like, garage and pit footage that was just home shot, and it's a short little clip. The 10 seconds I watched of it starts off with a weed joke, so I'm like, all right, well, this is worth watching. So that'll be the other video of the week. So those are already on the YouTube playlist, so check them out. We'll be talking about next week.
Hell yeah.
And also next week, NASCAR will be, or not this week, this coming weekend, NASCAR is going to be in Dover. We already talked about how Eric Jones will not be in the car. But Dover is not the worst race in the world. So I'll be watching them. Absolutely. I don't really know what else to say about the weekend, but, racing's happening.
Yeah, lots of racing.
I saw that Dover still has their scoring pylon. They posted a picture of it.
They did. They're very proud of it. The Lucas Oil late models are back this weekend as well. They're at Georgetown. That's always a good show, as well as the World of Outlaws late models. The 410s are, I believe they're in Knoxville this weekend. Maybe it's the weekend after. I can't remember. But the big show for me, which unfortunately I'm missing, the Stafford Spring Sizzler is rolling off this weekend. That's always a hell of a show. If you got Flow Racing, or if a link magically appears again, I'll be sure to share it with whoever. But unfortunately, I'm not going to get to watch a whole lot of racing this weekend because I will be in Branson, Missouri with my parents, having a nice conservative Vegas weekend with them. But the good news is, if any of you, which is not going to happen, but if you happen to be in Branson, Missouri, on Friday night, I will be at Wrangler's Honky Tonk watching Jacob Tovar play some old school country music. So that's going to be a lot of fun. For those of you who might not know who he is, you might if you've seen Reservation Dogs, that scene where the kids go to the honky tonk and the kid gets drunk and runs off and then eventually commits suicide. The cool band playing in the bar is Jacob Tovar. So I recommend checking him out.
I did some line dancing with Uncle Rob.
It's true.
Just one last death reference, too, on
exactly.
the show.
And also, I got to say this. I'm really excited for Saturday because there's a big family reunion event happening. A bunch of people I haven't seen in a few months. And my cousin's going to be there, who is also a big NASCAR fan. So hopefully we'll get to pull the old laptop out and watch some Xfinity racing out there on the pavilion together. And I'm really very much looking forward to that. But yeah, if you happen to be in Branson for some reason, call me up because I'm going to look for some shit to do at nighttime.
Oh, Lord. What about you, Meemaw? You're no racing this weekend for you? What?
I'm still recovering. I will be at home watching from the safety of my home. I don't think anyone will be dying in the Dover campgrounds this weekend.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe in the casino, but...
Maybe at the casino.
Oh, one more thing I forgot to bring up about the monster truck video. There was a Jeep called Deranged in the drag races.
This guy had eyes on it.
Yeah, had eyes. This guy ran without a visor and was in his jeans. Just truly a man, a deranged man. So,
well, there were
insane.
I did make a note. There were actually a couple. Like one of the women in the field, she didn't have a visor on either. And like I don't know what the hell the thought process is with that, but
you get your sins in easier, but I guess they didn't exist back. They're just dipping back in those days, so.
Yeah, that's straight dip. So yeah, I guess that wraps up the show this week. As always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things. SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com is the store. Miss True Love, I don't know what she'll be doing on Instagram this weekend, but I'll
probably share some Talladega shit.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. Rob Motes _unofficials, where you can find me on Instagram. You can follow my adventures in Branson this weekend. Also, my band's called These Wild Plains. Always check us out. Charlie Marie, who I play drums for. From time to time. At some point in the next few weeks, there's going to be a really cool Western as fuck video coming out featuring her and our guitar player, Nick Mercado, who is a really nasty telly player. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I got a little sneak peek of some of the video last week, and it's going to be fucking awesome. So make sure you watch out for that. Like I said, I'll be in Branson. Come get drunk with me somewhere.
There you go.
Bring us back a t-shirt.
I will. Silver Dollar City t-shirt, yeah.
All right, folks, and with that, it looks like our check is here. So thank you once again for joining us at Applebee's, and we'll talk to you next week.